Hello, it is Thursday, May the 2nd, 2024, and I am talking today with Mark from Ontario, Canada. Hello.
Hello again from Sudbury, Melissa.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, I suppose, all things considering.
Well, I'll recap. You have a better recall for times and dates and particulars and things, but you and I spoke, I don't remember when, but not that long ago, we did a real history, the first one that we've done together, and I introduced that you were a friend to us in Sudbury, basically almost a neighbor, and you're a retired chiropractor. And you've done some really fun things like your music, which it's hard to say that it's karaoke because it's a really incredible act that you do where you write your own lyrics. And so, but anyway, this is Mark from Sudbury, a good friend to me and to Alan, and helped us in so many ways, too many to list. So if you're curious about that, you can go back and listen to the first Real History that we did.
Yeah, that was Real History number 50, actually.
Ah.
And that was just about 3 months ago, and done at the end of January 2024. And I was a personal friend of Alan's and still am a personal friend of yours, and one of the few people in this world who actually got to meet and know Alan Watt in real life, which was quite a thrill and quite an honor, I would say. And if you listen back on episode 50, The Real History, I explained how I met Alan and how basically I almost had to I semi stalked him, but in a nice way, in a nice way.
Yes.
Before he showed enough confidence in me and trust in me to invite me into his home, and thereafter we became much more friendly. So that's. You'll have to listen back to number 50 if you want to hear the whole story.
Okay. Well, so you must be relieved that all the snow is gone.
We had very little snow this year at all in Sudbury, actually. So most of the time was spent without any snow at all. I would say there's snow on the ground for maybe 6 weeks altogether.
Do you think that's global warming?
Oh, of course it is. Of course it is. It has everything to do with human beings causing too much CO emissions, and has nothing to do with the chemtrails they're spraying in the sky whatsoever.
Correct answer. This can go up on YouTube.
Yeah, right. It's funny you should mention that, because the snow thing, there's a lot of stuff since I've been learning about how the world really operates. There's a lot of stuff that I've lost interest in because it's just part of the big plan and part of the propaganda. There are some things that kind of die hard, and you still need to, you need to go back to some of your things that you've been interested in your whole life. For instance, I'm a pretty big hockey fan. I played a lot of hockey when I was younger, and I followed hockey since I was a young kid. Collected hockey cards when I was a young kid, and I had probably thousands of dollars in hockey cards at my in a box that my grandmother threw out in the garbage on me. When we moved from one house to another, she didn't think she would ask me if those cards were important to me, and they were extremely important to me. And the thing is, some of the cards in there might be worth a lot of money at this point in time. Although I don't think I would have the gumption to do research and try to figure out who might want to buy them and stuff. So they probably would have just stayed in the box anyways. So I still am I'm a hockey fan, although my interest in it has dampened considerably. But I do follow the NHL, the National Hockey League, and I do look at the hockey highlights on a daily basis, and also look at the National Hockey League website on pretty much a daily basis. And something that caught my eye on NHL and all the professional sports leagues are doing the same thing. They're all on board, of course, with all the agendas, the global agendas and everything. The NHL has something called NHL Green Initiative, which recently came out with a headline. It said, "How Changing Climates Impact Outdoor Hockey." And funny enough, this past winter, usually I'll go out to the outdoor rink a few times during the winter and have a little skate and maybe play a little bit of pickup hockey with some of the kids and stuff. But this year, there were no hockey rinks at all this year outdoors for the first time in my memory of in my whole lifetime. So I wasn't able to do that. Of course, with all the spraying that they're doing in the skies with the chemtrails, they're trying to warm the climate up and trying to give people the impression that we are going through warming. And, of course, this past winter being so mild and the inability to make outdoor rinks just further solidified their position on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was also thinking along that lines. I was thinking about the word sport and where that word might have came from. Now, I never really looked into it. I never Googled it and to find out the origin or the etymology of the word sport was. But to me, I just think of if I slowly say the word sport and I go, Support. I think sport was shortened from the word support because sport, of course, is used as a form of support to support the system that they have in place in a number of different ways. Of course, they're using it to push all these global initiatives that they're interested in the general public buying into, and particularly with the NHL, a real big emphasis on blacks in hockey, and they have a lot of stuff about giving equal opportunity to black people to get involved with hockey and to become coaches and all kinds of stuff. And this year in NHL, for the first time, they actually have one referee who is black. He's the first black referee ever. And I have nothing against black people whatsoever, you know what I mean? But and in fact, this black referee is one of the best referees I've ever seen. He's extremely well-spoken because when the referees announce penalties. They come to center ice and they have a wireless mic on them now, and they announce penalties and other different things that happen during the game. They'll make announcements, and this black guy he's fantastic. He speaks so well, and he's the best one of all the referees that I've heard speak. So he's. Should be there, and there's no reason why he shouldn't be there. But I'm sure the reason that he has been put there is because they're trying to push the black equality agenda. So the NHL also, they were also pushing the LGBTQ agenda, and they were having NHL teams warm up with rainbow jerseys. But apparently there was some backlash from some of the fans, which is great, and they discontinued that, and they're not doing that anymore, but they did do that for a few years before public opinion swayed them not to do that anymore.
I looked up the etymology.
Okay.
And the word circa 1400 was sporten, to take pleasure, enjoy, or amuse oneself, from the old French desporter, to divert, amuse, please, play, to seek amusement, carry away. So there is a bit of support there because the word is porter. So carry away,
right,
from serious matters. The des would be away or dis away, and the porter to carry. So,
right.
There you
go. So we all know that, like most people think sport is there, they know that sport is there for entertainment, but they don't understand that all these different sports were developed so that more and more people would be distracted,
mm-hmm,
from what's really important, and they would follow their favorite team, and they would almost become they become fanatics for that team, and which always, like ever since I started following any sports at all, I've never had a team where I was like ever sad that they lost. although I was a fan, because where I lived in Northern Ontario, we used to get feeds from Quebec for the Saturday night hockey games, and we always used to get feeds for the Montreal Canadiens teams. So they were my so-called favorite team when I was young. But I never once recall being sad when they lost or being angry when they lost. It was more like, you know, a slight disappointment, but it was like, oh, well, they lost. But many people live and die by their sports team's performance. And the weird thing about sports teams is that very few or even none of the members of those sports teams even come from their community.
That's right.
You know, they're just haphazardly put together from through many different circumstances and chance to happen to be playing for that city that year. So it just mind boggles me that people are so fanatical about the sports. We went from the climate change to the NHL green and how changing climate impacts outdoor hockey. Well, that speaks volumes right there.
Yeah, it is interesting. The idea of doing your personal best at something, like an Olympian, or you know, wanting—I mean, you can kind of think about something like that. But even then, these are things that you imagine that you want to do when you're quite young. But they keep the fans in a state of arrested development around the sporting events. Again, it's just something to occupy their time. Think if they put all of that energy into anything that mattered. You know, all of that emotion and...
Yeah, all of that emotion and also all of the money that is spent, and all of the resources that are used. It's and if you think about like sports and movies and all the all the unnecessary expenditures, although it does support people and creates jobs in certain ways, and so there is sort of a spin-off effect to some extent, but that all could definitely be put to better use.
Did you see that movie from the 70s, Rollerball?
That's funny you should mention that, because I watched that movie back when it first came out, and James Caan starred in that. I hadn't watched it in a number of years, and I tried to... YouTube used to have movies on it that you could... like, all different kinds of movies that you could watch on YouTube. In recent years, they've pretty well quashed the ability to watch movies by copyright infringement, but they did it originally to get people to come onto their site and get them interested in the site. Mm-hmm. So they didn't do the copyright infringements at first, but now you can hardly get any movies on there. So I looked up Rollerball on YouTube to try to watch it, and I couldn't. I couldn't get anything more than watching some highlights, and that was about 2 months ago, actually. I thought of that movie and trying to watch it. So then I went and looked it up on BitChute, which BitChute seems to be some channels that for some reason can get past the copyright infringements and keep movies on there. And there's a better array of movies on there, but I also couldn't find Rollerball on there. So I did some further searching and found a site called Putlocker. I think it's called Putlocker,
I know that, yeah.
K-E-R?
Yeah,
so...
I mean, I haven't looked at it since Canada, but...
Make a short answer long. Yes, I did watch the whole movie about a month ago. So what were you going to say about it?
Well, what I was going to say is that we are, in a way, at the Rollerball setup for how sports will be. And I do think, I'm not sure that they'll ever become that violent of a form of entertainment the way that you've seen in a lot of movies like Running Man, etc. But what was interesting was that they were showing a time in the future when everything was run by corporations. And the sporting teams the franchises weren't held by cities, but by corporations. And we have seen that now. So you actually have here franchises that are corporate franchises. The franchises they don't have loyalty to a city whatsoever, so they move wherever they're going to get a bigger stadium built, wherever they have a better agreement worked out on profit sharing, that kind of thing. But that was the whole thing with Rollerball. The teams were run by corporations. And countries, the idea that people still think that countries exist in the way that we might have thought about them a generation ago, it's just interesting to me, because corporations have no loyalty to a country. They're not constrained by the laws and rules and regulations of that country. And this is what we now have with the sporting events. And I'm just curious how people can get excited about a team that's owned by Verizon or, you know, for example.
Yeah. Well, again, I don't think they really think about that very much. They're just interested in the sport itself, mm-hmm. and they don't really think about all those factors surrounding it very much. What's interesting about the NHL in recent years is they allowed a new team into the league 3 years ago in Seattle, and they named the team the Seattle Kraken. And I didn't even know what a kraken was until I looked it up after I heard the name. And it's like a sea monster kind of thing. However, the Seattle Kraken play in, and the arena they play in is called the Climate Pledge Arena. They're really putting it in people's faces.
They are.
And the Los Angeles Kings hockey team plays in an arena called the cryptocurrency.com arena.
That's a mouthful.
Now that brings me to another topic that I was thinking of bringing up with you today, and that is the prospect of cash being eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, everybody's now heard of and is seeing the big push for cryptocurrencies, which is, and I know you've talked about that with other people, and you've researched a few years ago. You researched Bitcoin and found that all roads lead to the World Economic Forum. With that, I come across some articles. One was called, "Here Are 5 Things You Should Only Pay For in Cash," which I was actually kind of surprised to see an article out there that was pushing the use of cash. But this is where you should use cash, they say. But the premise of the article to start off with is that credit cards and your bank cards charge fees for using them. So when you use cash for some things, you should use cash for some things to avoid having to pay these fees. So the first thing they say that you should spend you should pay for in cash is your college tuition.
Because I know so many people who have that kind of money just lying around in cash.
Yeah, and I'm sure the college would just love if you showed up with 10 grand in cash, and slapped it on their table. The next place that you should spend cash at is the doctor's office.
Why?
Well,
does it say why?
Well, because it's so you don't have to pay merchant fees, or so that you can eliminate, most states no longer restrict merchants from charging extra to customers who pay with credit to cover the fees that credit card processing companies charge for every swipe. Those surcharges can be as high as 4%. While the healthcare industry has lagged, that's all changing now that new technology is making it easier for doctors, dentists, hospitals, and other healthcare providers to build the cost of using a credit card into their price structures. So they're telling you to spend cash there, but at the same time, they're telling you that that things are changing and that soon you won't have to spend cash there. The next one is government offices, such as your local DMV or post office. The next one, and this is where I do spend cash at all the time because I'm a cash person still, one of the few holdouts, the gas station. And the last one out of the 5 things is the IRS for your tax bill. So,
well, I have a better...
I'm sure the IRS wouldn't have any suspicions if you sent them a wad of cash.
Right. Well, with IRS and property taxes and all the taxes, I wouldn't use a credit card or cash or check or anything like that. I have found what works, and actually what they demand is a pound of flesh.
Yeah, exactly. Shylock.
Yeah, so I'm Shylock, like, okay, where do I cut the pound of flesh off this time?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I know you've had some fun the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's just...
I know. It's nauseating. And especially when you realize that the income tax came in as a temporary tax to finance the war, and of course anything that they bring in as a tax they never relinquish.
Mm-hmm.
They just continue to add on to. So, and then I came across another article. First, I'm going to give you a story about me before I go into this article.
Okay.
I've had a couple of experience. I pay cash for as much as I can if it's a really large amount. It's a little awkward to bring cash into the fold, but basically anything under $1,000, I try to pay with cash.
Oh, can I interrupt you for just a second? Several years ago, I was researching some things about Switzerland for Alan, just a variety of things that he wanted to know. And I accidentally stumbled on the Swiss mentality around cash. And this is interesting because you think of it as bankers, high tech, etc. The Swiss love cash. And they even pay their mortgage payments and their rent and their, you know, things that you know are going to be several thousands of dollars a month in cash, which I found fascinating. Now, they may be moving away from that slowly over time, but they're the average householder operates in cash.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they're slowly whittling away at that over there.
Yeah.
Cash is, you know, once a society goes cashless, as you know, and that's true, you've totally lost your freedom at that point.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is a hill to die on. that truly, because not that I necessarily care. Most of my expenditures are documented and. It's just that it's
what it represents.
My privacy.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it represents privacy and it represents the ability to just not be feel like you're being surveilled at every step. So, about 2 months ago, I went into Canadian Tire and bought something, a few things, probably $400 or $500 worth of stuff. I only go in to stores very, very infrequently with a list that once I've got a list of things that I need, I go in and get a whole bunch of things at one time because I really don't like spending too much time in a store. I went to the cash and I paid the cashier with cash and she actually commended me for using cash. Yeah, she was like happy that I was using cash, and so I got into a little bit of a discussion. Luckily there wasn't anybody behind me, and I was able to talk to her for a few minutes. So I asked her about, I said, I doubt if there's very many people that use cash anymore. And she goes, you know, for a while there, people were starting, there was very few people using cash, but lately, she says, I've noticed that more people are starting to use cash again. She goes, that's a good thing because, you know, when all the systems go down, like it has a few times, all the Interact systems have gone down and people have been stuck at gas stations with empty gas tanks and at a multitude of places where they have no cash on them at all to pay their bill, and were left in the lurch. And so that surprised me and was a very pleasant surprise. And then about 2 weeks ago, I went grocery shopping, and again, I don't go grocery shopping as frequently as I used to. Before COVID, I would probably go like once a week, and now I try to try to go about once every 4 to 6 weeks and just stock up on things. Since the COVID experience and not wanting to expose myself to all of the zombie mask wearers, especially since I refused to wear a mask in the grocery store and I did not wear a mask in the grocery store, I still limited my exposure to any kind of backlash that I received from standing my ground. But anyway, so a couple weeks ago, I went in to get my loaded up with groceries, and my bill was $774 or something like that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so I pull out cash, and I counted out as I'm counting, and I'm looking at it. It was a young girl that was a teller at the store. She was probably 18 or so. And I could see as I was counting my cash, her eyes rolling around in her head with confusion. And so I counted out in front of her and then gave it to her. She started trying to count it back herself, and she tried like three times to count it, and she couldn't. And it was like $600 of it were in hundreds and fifties, and the last 140 was in twenties. So she could not. So she called over another girl who was probably like around her age. And asked her to count it out for her. So this girl started counting out, and she would go 100, 200, and then she'd put 50 down, and then another 50, and another 50 down really fast, and then she'd pause for a second and look at and think, how much was that? And go, oh yeah, and then she put another 50 down and two more 50s really fast after that, and then. Finished counting, and she went, oh, there's 650 here. And I just looked at her and go, and I looked at them both and went, we are in major trouble here in society, aren't we? And they both looked at me very indignantly, and I took the cash and I counted it out. I put them in piles, 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, 600, 700. It wasn't 650, it was 700 there. And they both looked at me indignantly, oh, you must think we're stupid, which, yes, I did think they were stupid. So then this other guy comes over, because he's kind of interested. This other guy who works there comes over, this young guy too, he was probably around 20 as well, comes over, and he looks at the cash sitting there, and he goes, wow, he said, that's a lot of cash. And I looked back at him and went, yeah, it's ever a lot of cash, eh? Can you believe all that cash? And I, like, am totally embellished it, and they didn't even get what I, like, my embellishment or my sarcasm at all. And he goes, yeah, it is a lot of cash. And I was thinking, oh my God, they think $775 in cash is a lot of cash. So anyways, it just totally, you know, shows where the young people are with in their mentality with cash, you know, and how to, you know, they want to get the young people, all they need to do is get the young people, because the old people are going to be resistant to change, and if they get the young people to go along with what's happening, that pretty well will cinch it for them. So this other article here that I had was called The $100 Bill is America's Most Common Currency, and it's most annoying. First of all, just from the title, I was thinking the $100 bill is the most common currency. I try to, when I'm getting cash out of the cash machine, they want now, they used to give me like a variety of bills, but in the last couple of years, they've been trying to just give me $100 bills all the time. So you can choose on the cash machine the amount of bills you want, and so I always have to change it from, so if I get $1,000 out, they want to give me 10 hundreds. And I know that $100 bills are hard to work with, and because cash is being eliminated, that a lot of places don't have the right amount of change to give. So I try to keep my denominations down to lower amounts so that I can have a closer amount of denomination to pay them, so they don't complain about having the proper change. So that just off the top, that headline of this article, the $100 bill is America's most common currency and it's most annoying. Well, they're trying to make it the most common currency by giving it to you when you ask for cash. And yes, it is most annoying because of the reason I just gave. Mm-hmm. But you can tell right from the headline of this article that it's not going to be pro-cash. So it starts out, Reza Sisson went to a flea market in New York this month with five $100 bills. Now that right there is a red flag. Who would go to a flea market? Because flea markets usually like sell very cheap stuff.
Yes.
And things that usually, like, most things would be like in the $10 to $20 range. Nevertheless, you know, anything over $100 would probably be rare. But she went there with five $100 bills. So, surprisingly, the next line in the article is, surprisingly, and I put that word in there, one by one, vendors refused to take her money, saying they couldn't make change or only accepted digital payments through Venmo or Zelle. Duh! Mm-hmm. Determined to break the bills, the 26-year-old senior program coordinator tried using them at coffee shops and then her local fruit stand. She was refused again. The bills are still in her wallet. I can't even read this without laughing. I had hoped cash would be more convenient, particularly at a flea market, Sisson said. The $100 bill is far and away the most common U.S. paper currency, dwarfing even the $1 bill. This isn't a quote from her. This is just a sociofactual part. The number of bills bearing Benjamin Franklin's mug more than doubled between 2012 and 2022, faster growth than any other denomination, according to the most recent Federal Reserve data. For all its prevalence, the $100 bill is more effective for storing money than spending it. Even when cashiers do accept the bills, they hold up the checkout lines to verify they aren't counterfeits, which is not true because when I go pay for groceries, if it's $700, I will keep some $100 bills to pay for a $700 bill, and they never check to see if they're counterfeits. And then it says, or, at minimum, give you an eye roll along with your change. Economists have called for slowing down the printing press due to their use in illicit activity. Almost everyone questions you and your legitimacy for using a $100 bill, said Sage.
Hey, so where you were reading in the article, you were talking about almost everyone looks at the $100 bill, and then we got disconnected.
Okay. So Skype must not like us talking about the abolishment of cash.
No.
Too bad. We're going to continue. It's a little bit of a long article, but I think it's really, really interesting to go through and laugh at. Economists have called for slowing down the printing press due to their use in illicit activity. Everyone almost questions you. Should be almost everyone questions you, but it says everyone almost questions you and your legitimacy for using a $100 bill, said Sage Handley, 23. Handley, who works as a marketing and research assistant in College Station, Texas, maybe you should give Sage a call since she's a neighbor of yours, Do you know where College Station, Texas is?
I do. It's down. Yeah. But in Texas, okay. Texas is so big that nobody's your neighbor.
No, I know. It's pretty big. Yeah. So Handley found a $100 bill in an old makeup bag earlier this month. She posted on TikTok about the embarrassment of spending it, one of many social media posts mocking the awkwardness of paying for a small item with a $100 bill. In Midtown Manhattan, cashiers were on alert when a Wall Street Journal reporter tried to use $100 bills to pay for small items. Some held the bill up to the light to spot USA 100 embedded into it to confirm its authenticity. Others used a counterfeit pen, which has ink that turns black when in contact with fake currency. At a bookstore, a cashier yelled, "Check, please," and an employee appeared from behind a tall stack of books to run a $100 bill through a counterfeit bill detector before completing a transaction for $3 worth of children's books. The store had recently caught a customer trying to use a fake $100 bill. At a nearby vegan restaurant, a $100 bill was rejected as payment for a $4.95 bottle of kombucha. The store didn't have enough cash in the register. Another customer had walked out that day because the restaurant wouldn't accept the bills, a staffer said. Some 60% of all payments are made with credit or debit cards, according to Federal Reserve data. Cash use dropped sharply during the pandemic in 2020, which was, of course, is, of course, one of the reasons for the one of the many, many, many reasons for the pandemic, scamdemic, in 2020, and it hasn't fully recovered. Today, cash is the third most used payment in the U.S. by number of transactions. While more than half of $100 bills are held abroad, there were enough in the U.S. for every living American to have 55 in 2022, which is really surprising to me.
I also have to say here, too, Mark, that those 5,500... Is that what they said?
Yeah, 55. Each American is supposed apparently has 55 $100 bills.
55 $100 bills. Well, those are not evenly distributed. I did not get mine.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the case. So there are some people that are hoarding an awful lot of cash. The Fed's most recent order for note printing follows the same trend as before the pandemic, the central bank has said. The notes were ordered primarily to replace those destroyed in normal processing. One reason they have become so prevalent is that they enter circulation far quicker than they leave. They can last over a decade longer than $1 and $5 bills, partly because people are more likely to hold than spend them. So why get them if you're just holding them? For all its annoyance, the $100 bill still holds a cultural cachet. Kelvin Jenkins, who lives in Benicia, California, said, "Big bills feel like status symbols." Earlier this month, he withdrew 100 $100 bills to purchase a car through Facebook Marketplace. The bank teller was shocked at why he needed the cash and asked what he did for a living, said Jenkins, who works in a leadership development firm. Cash is typically reserved for smaller purchases. Customers spend $39 on average when paying with cash, compared to $95 when paying with credit cards. The ease of hoarding and hiding larger bills suits them to criminal activities such as tax evasion. It was advocated that the government stop printing the high denomination note. The annoyance of using the $100 bill can make people spend less. Research shows that college students are less willing to purchase items when they are given a $100 bill compared with 520s. This phenomenon has been coined the denomination effect, where the form that money comes in has an impact on a person's desire to spend it. If you spend money on a credit card, you get that same card back after the transaction. Spending a $100 bill essentially destroys it, she said. A $1 bill doesn't feel like much, but it's a $100 bill. But a $100 bill feels very meaningful and beefy. Given inflation is still at elevated levels, the feeling of value that comes with a $100 bill is only going down. A $100 bill today has the equivalent purchasing power to about $76 a decade ago. Connor Morton isn't complaining. The director of operations at Prenetta, a Kansas City company that stocks ATM, said the company has been loading more ATMs with $100 bills lately. The note is especially popular among ATMs at barbershops, tattoo shops, hotels, and convenience stores. It's five times less work to load the $100 bills than 520s, Morton said. And that's the end of the article.
Just for our education here, you said that it was $76. That, what was that, 20 years ago?
Yeah, compared to a decade.
A decade, 10 years ago. Okay, so 76,
which
10
I,
years ago.
Which I dispute as well.
Well, $100 in 1924, so 100 years ago, $100 100 years ago had the purchasing power of $1,827.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty impressive inflation, eh?
Yeah, yes it is.
Yeah.
But because of interest, money is only put into circulation through loans, bank loans.
Mm-hmm.
But bank loans don't just bring the principal amount into circulation. They also bring the burden of having to pay interest on it into circulation.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself bakes into the cake that inflation has to occur right there.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever see that documentary called O Canada about currency?
Okay. I definitely saw that. I definitely saw that. In fact, back in our last, real history with you, episode 50, I was explaining how I quote unquote woke up, and I know you don't like that term, and actually neither do I, but for lack of better words, I woke up to. Really what was, I started to wake up to what was really happening was that guy named Dave, who
yes.
I talked to you about,
yes.
Dave, one of those
yeah.
Daves,
yeah.
Dave gave me that to watch.
Oh, I forgot it.
O Canada,
yeah.
O Canada, our bought and sold out land. So, yeah, that was actually the video that got me onto the game.
Well, I don't remember you talking to me about that. Sorry, but I think for
That's
listeners
okay.
out there, even though it's about Canada and Canada's dollar and what happened with Canada's currency, it is such a concise overview of how the monetary system is played and corrupted. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. It's very well done.
Very well done and very clear. You don't have to have a mind for, you know, fiscal matters at all to understand the racket.
Yeah. Yes, it's true, although I do question how the video was done by two brothers from Southern Ontario who were doing videos on different things that, and one day they would ask a question and then they would try to find out an answer to that question. And this one particular day they asked the question of, how does money come into circulation? So they started researching trying to find that out. And somehow that led them to being able to actually interview in person Paul Martin, who was formerly our finance minister in Canada and subsequently became our prime minister of Canada. And somehow they were able to personally interview Paul Martin, and Paul Martin bumbled along with his answer by giving basically a non-answer that was gibberish and making himself look like a bumbling fool of an idiot in the process of not answering that question with a non-answer. So I question how they were able to get into his office to question him and the motive for him allowing them to come into his office. And they also interviewed some MPs and MPPs and stuff on the matter as well. So I think that video, although it does definitely explain where the money system comes from, it goes back to the same old fact that very few people are going to be interested in this type of information.
Yes.
And they purposely brought out this type of information to draw in those very few people who could be drawn in by this, so that those people would get the information from these videos and then start becoming somewhat zealots and start trying to convince other people who were not interested in this type of information, and making those people look at these quote-unquote zealots as crazy or conspiracy theorists or whatever, which just perpetuated the problem of trying to get people to listen to this type of information. You see what I mean? So that was one of a number of different videos that surprised me, that certain interviews were given by certain people when information was given in those interviews that was true, why they would allow that information out. And again, it's because very few people are going to follow it.
That's true. You know, that you just reminded me of a documentary that we watched years ago about the CFR, and it was done with all kinds of access to the Council on Foreign Relations, buildings, main buildings, members, and so forth. And I haven't been able to find that online. I do have a disc of it somewhere, but I've searched high and low online. If I could just remember who narrated it, but that hasn't popped into my head yet. But it's right. The same thing. It's this very insider information where they reveal a little bit, not everything, but they give you a little bit of a revelation and a whole lot of spin. Same thing. Do you remember the one that was done? I think it was called the 1% about, they interviewed a Johnson & Johnson heiress, and it was, you know, it was the 1%, a very wealthy, as they were criticizing the 1% and talking about, you know, how did they get their money and corruption and so forth. But these are kind of, you know, they expose
interesting. Was it Johnson & Johnson or Procter & Gamble?
Oh, Mark, I will defer to you because your memory is much better than mine.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I'm just wondering because there was one done by one of the owners of Procter & Gamble. His last name was Gamble. And it was...
That could have been it. Did it
and
have...
And it was along...
Did it have that big investor, you know, from the U.S., Warren Buffett, I think, was interviewed in it?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's the same one.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. Yeah, anyways.
So that was Procter & Gamble. Okay.
Yeah, but there might have been another one for Johnson & Johnson, who knows. But even then, I was thinking, why... that actually came out right during the Occupy movement, which I was... a spectating, so to speak, part of, not a full active participant in, but sort of on the sidelines observing. That documentary came out right in the middle of the Occupy movement, actually. So it was one that was circulating around to watch at that point. But yeah, so again, that's just another one where you scratch your head and go, why is the, you know, and you're thinking, here's a guy who's, you know, the owner of a major corporation such as Procter & Gamble trying to expose the system and stuff when he is a major part of perpetuating the system.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's an interesting thing. It just popped into my head as we're talking about this, that there really is a whole industry, the expose industry, I do not think is grassroots at all. It's like, you know, you questioning how these two brothers from Southern Ontario get to meet with Paul Martin. But I think that we're looking at a very controlled expose documentary industry, because we saw the same thing during COVID, where there were a whole range of documentaries and movies that came out exposing certain aspects of the scam. I was illustrating The Last Real History, I think it was, and I found Henrique mentioned Lord Monckton, Christopher Monckton.
And that's another one that made me scratch my head.
Yes, and what I saw was his parachute stunt around the 2011, was it Conference of the Parties? I don't know. There was some event where he jumped out of a plane and did a and it landed at a place that CFACT, the Climate Depot guys, had set up for him. And it reminded me of the big, heavily touted Climate Depot documentary that came out about a decade ago. And all of these things are really heavily promoted. Expose a nice chunk of some corruption or some issue with the agenda. And I think what we're looking at is, you know, controlled steam valves. Obviously, yeah. They know that people are going to get wise. And so they have these steam valves. And Henrique made a really good point about Schellenberger possibly playing that role of Monckton, you know, bring people back to the center, you know, not too angry, just, you know, control them by continuously bringing them around to the middle point where, well, we know, according to Schellenberger, that, you know, climate, man-made global warming is a real thing, but let's not go overboard with our approach to dealing with it.
Yeah, it's dead, and that's my sentiment exactly on all that. And who knows, they may even, well, they probably have ways of being able to track through IP addresses and stuff who is watching and reading what.
Sure.
And keeping track that way as well. So they can tell, you know, who's who in the zoo, so to speak.
That's right.
Yeah. So how long have we been going now, about?
Well, we've been going about an hour.
Okay, well, there was one story that I wanted to, it's very quick.
Okay.
That I wanted to actually tell you on the first time we had our Real History episode 50, but never quite got to. And it's regarding the COVID thing and how, you know, we know for sure that it was planned well in advance, but I have some pretty solid evidence of an example of something that happened that pretty much proves that it was planned ahead of time.
Mm.
Back in 2012, I was talking to someone who I know very, very well. I was trying to explain to her and her husband about the chemtrails. She was listening, but her husband was getting visibly agitated and finally blurted out, this is BS, and stop talking like that. And he kind of got a little upset. So she kind of came to my rescue to some extent. She said, you know, she said some really weird things that have actually been happening lately, and you know, that surprised me. And this person works for the Ontario government, and she works as a purchasing agent. So what she does is, and she'd been working there for a few years up to that point, probably 5 or 6 years to that point, and what happens is every day invoices come across her desk, and she has to okay these invoices, and every invoice up to this particular day that she was talking about, every invoice had a title on it, and then it was itemized as to what was in the order and how much each item cost, and then there was a total at the bottom of all the itemized things that were in the invoice. Well, she said, 2 weeks ago I was at the office and I got this invoice across my desk, and it was really odd because there was nothing on it but a title and a total. And there was no itemization of what was in the order. And she goes, I was really baffled by this. She said the title at the top of the order was pandemic supplies.
Ooh. And that was 2012.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And so so she didn't know what to do with it because she couldn't okay it like that because it was an itemized. She didn't know what was in it. So she called her superior minion in, and her superior minion looked at her with a wink, wink, nod, nod, nudge, nudge, and told her to just sign off on it under my authority and don't worry about it. So
that,
she did.
That is interesting, Mark.
Now, the other thing she said at that like right after she told me that, was that they were also doing something else that she found very strange, and that was they were doing very intensive drills on what to do in case of government disruption.
Well, so, did she give you an example of what they were supposed to do?
I didn't. Our conversation kind of ended at that, and I quite frankly haven't even talked to her ever since then. Because
wow.
I was pretty disgusted by the fact that that she was one of the people that would just just doing her job.
Yes.
Just doing her job.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's still, as far as I know, she still works there. She probably does. So I just had no interest in speaking to her again after that. Although I would have been nice to question her further on some things, and I'm sure she actually would have opened up about a few things because she's. But anyway, so that I found that a really, really interesting story and something that people might want to hear about.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Yes. And I also, something that I was hoping to end off on just like I did in my last. The episode 50 of Real History is I had a Real History inspired parody song that I wanted to sing. It's probably a couple minutes long. Do we have time to throw that in here?
We'll make time. Sure.
Okay. So last time I sang, and this time when I'm singing again, I've talked for an hour. And talking for an hour before trying to sing is not so great for the singing voice because I'm getting a little raspy. So again, like I did last time, I'll try to take a drink of water and see if that calms things down well enough. Last time I sang a song that was inspired by something that you said to someone in one of your Real Histories, and you said to that person, waking up is hard to do. So I did a parody song called Waking Up is Hard to Do, and I did it to a song by Neil Sedaka, which was Breaking Up is Hard to Do. So for those of you who are interested, you can go back to episode 50 and go to the end and listen to that. I did that a cappella. This time I'm going to try to use a karaoke track and see how it'll come out on the audio.
Okay.
And this time my inspiration came not from you, something that you said, but something that one of your interviewees said. And they said, and you probably remember them saying this, although I can't remember who it was, or you may not remember who it was, but they said, yeah, Alan died just when we needed him most. Do you recall someone saying that on one of your Real Histories?
I do. I have a terrible memory for things.
You do so go, much work. And
it just
so
flows together.
Your head.
Yeah.
I was just curious as to if you did remember that.
No.
Or not. I certainly don't expect you to, but you did say that. Or sorry, you didn't say that. Woman that you were interviewing said that.
It might have been Laura.
It could have been Laura.
Yes.
Yeah, it was one of your first ones that you did.
Oh well, then heaven knows.
Near the beginning. But anyways, so of course when I heard that, I was like, I know a song that would fit that to perfectly. Now, this parody song has been the words have been rewritten to a song called Just When I Needed You Most, which is a 1979 one-hit wonder song sung by an artist named Randy Van Warmer, who ended up passing away at the age of 48 years old in 2004 of leukemia.
Mm.
I'm sure once I start singing the song that you'll recognize the song because it was a top charting song at the time. So here we go. Cue the music. You passed without warning and left us in mourning. We struggled with that every day. You helped keep us sane by exposing this war so we'd understand the foul play. Now we miss you more than we missed you before, and now where we'll find comfort, God knows. 'Cause you left us just when we needed you most. You left us just when we needed you most. You will often be scorned at public conforming with rules that made them less free. You gritted your teeth with disdain at this trend. The masses just bend at their knees. Now we need you more than we needed before, and now where we'll find comfort, God knows, 'cause you left us just when we needed you most. You left us just when we needed you most. Passed without warning and left us in mourning. We struggle with that every day. You help keep us sane by exposing this war, so we understand the foul play. Now we love you more than we loved you before, and now where we'll find comfort, God knows, 'cause you left us just when we needed you most. Oh yeah, you left us just when we needed you most. You left us just when we needed you most. Did that come through fairly well?
It did, Mark. You brought tears to my eyes, and I don't even know why I thought for a second with that song choice and that comment from the listener that I thought this was going to be a humorous parody. It made me start crying. So.
Well, I almost broke up there in the middle of it. Quickly, because I was singing it, I choked up just very briefly there, but I almost lost it too.
No, that was very lovely, and my goodness, you hit those high notes. That's amazing. But Mark, that's really beautiful. That was beautiful. I thank you for doing that. That's, you know.
So you recognize that song though?
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah,
definitely. But.
Okay.
I mean, that was beautiful. Thank you. And, you know, so many people have said that. And, you know, honestly, I will always feel that way, like at the core of me, because there never would have been a time when it would have been okay to lose Alan. I often think I'd give up everything, anything. Just for one more night.
Mm-hmm. I know you would.
But sometimes when people write and tell me that sentiment, I always think, he armed us with so much knowledge and the benefit of his wisdom around it. And if there is ever an explanation for a terrible thing, I sometimes look at time and where we are. It's not endless. It isn't forever. It's not merrily, merrily rolling down the stream. It's that at this time, those of us with eyes to see and ears to hear who are absorbing and trying to change our lives and live accordingly, this is the time when we have almost, I look at it as being called to stand on our own two feet and do the fighting or the
resisting.
It's time for us to do
non-conforming.
That.
Non-conforming.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of that. So.
Yeah.
Well, I would keep talking to you, but I have got to jump off and record a real history. I'm not a real history. I've got to jump off and record a book club installment. So.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do that now. And for those of you listening to this episode, I thank you. And if you've got tears in your eyes, then it's true. We love Alan more. I do. I love him more all the time. And I miss him. And that'll always be that way. But in next week, we've got Neil Foster, and I'm looking forward to that. So thank you for listening. And thanks, Mark.
My pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Well, I've got something that works.